This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
There is a lack of engagement with the community in Penang, as well as a lack of environmental awareness on issues on Penang Island, especially with regards to sometimes the over-enthusiasm for development. One of our concerns actually would be, even in this particular area of study in Telok Bahang on the Langgars, would be the implementation of the highway which is supposed to connect Tanjung Bunga to Telok Bahang may in fact run along the hill landscape and thereby fragmenting the environments or the Langgar territories between the shore and the hill.
During the process, the sound pollution and the cutting down of trees happening at the site, then lack of food, and also the langurs, they will definitely alter their routes. So this will create an unhealthy generation of langurs or other species of animal, which will go down to, the vulnerability of the species will be increasing.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. We're continuing our coverage on past films that were released under the Freedom Film Fest, which has been bringing socially relevant human rights films to Malaysians since back in 2003. So as we are staying home to stay safe, the folks behind the Freedom Film Network are releasing specially curated Freedom Film playlists dubbed Weekend Watch with Freedom Film Fest on their YouTube channel for a look back at the many thought-provoking issues highlighted throughout the years through their films. So earlier this month, they released a playlist on the topic of the environment, and two of the featured documentaries were The Hills and the Sea from 2017 and Doa Seorang Nelayan or A Fisherman's Prayer from 2019, both made by Andrew Han, which tackled the topic of development projects in Penang and how those plans directly impact communities and the environment. So Andrew is joining me now to share more, and also joining us is Jolene Yap. She's a wildlife researcher. She's from the Langgar Project in Penang, and she was also featured in the film The Hills and the Sea, and she's going to tell me more about what she had to say during those films. Welcome both of you. How are you today?
Hi, Juliet. We're good. Thank you for having us again.
Yeah, hi, Juliet. Thank you so much for having us again.
Over here. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. So we're going to find out what's happening over in Penang. I know there's many development projects there. But I guess before we start, you guys are both Penang natives, am I right? Surrounded by hills and the seas, you know, Andrew, as the title of your documentary alludes. Is that also sort of what drew you to environmental related issues?
I guess so, because, I mean, growing up in Penang, surrounding with everywhere, just 10 minutes away, the hills, the rivers, the beach, and things like that, does play an important part in building my perspective of nature and also development itself, lah. But I think it was also later on when I grew up and read up more about things and meeting a lot of people like Jolene and other environmental group people, it opens up my eyes, and I was able to really think about how Penang should be and what Penang can actually become in the future. So the perspective of environmental rights and environmental activism comes in much, much later in my life, because I was spending quite some time in KL, and upon returning to Penang, was able to make a film about environmental issues in Penang. It really shapes me to think about the environmental issues in Penang in particular. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about, of course, the films that you made and why you made it. But Jolene, you know, we've spoken to you before, you're no stranger to the show. You are, of course, a wildlife researcher. You're, the head of the Langgar Project in Penang. What was it like for you? Did that also have an impact growing up in Penang, have an impact on, where you ended up today?
Yes, definitely. So I grew up in Bukit Matajam, a small town in mainland Penang. So I was quite lucky as a kid, because Bukit Matajam is surrounded by hills, right? We not only have the Cerro Tukun, but also Berapik Hill and Bukit Seraya. So I was a wild child. My dad would bring me for fishing and hiking, etc. But I always fascinated by Penang Island, you know. Andrew, he grew up on the Penang Island. So every time when I was young, my dad would brought me over to the ferry, to Georgetown, and even to Batu Feringgi. I always feel so fascinated. It looks so different compared to the small town that I grew up in. Yeah, but I think this kind of like shaped my perspective, because I'm lucky to grow up in a small town with plenty of green spaces. But as I grew up, and then after I went abroad for study, and then I came back again, I learned a lot about the importance of coexisting with the wildlife and nature, as well as safeguarding our remaining green space, regardless it's a recreational parks or remaining secondary forests. So the changes in Penang is really surprising to me, especially when I went abroad for like a 2 to 2.5 years and I came back and I see a lot of changes, especially on Penang Island itself. So this kind of like shapes me into who I am in right now. The objective of Langer Project Penang is to continue to push for coexistence and understanding between human and nature.
Yeah, okay. And, you know, we're going to talk about Langer Project as well, but you know, just looking at Penang, we know that it's undergone massive development since, I think it was the 60s, right? And that's still continuing today. You know, there's plans for land reclamation mega project. You know, there's lots of plans for transit programs. How much of the landscape has changed for the both of you, you know, as far as you can see, since you guys were kids?
You are right to say that since the 60s, that under the leadership of Lim Chong Yu, there was a massive development on the factories and industrialization of the places in Penang. So it does change gradually, but we can see the rapid and changes actually right from 2008 onwards. The amounts of condominiums, amounts of projects that's been built, and you can really see the difference. I live in KL for some time, and upon returning home to visit Penang, you can see the tremendous changes. At first, it was good. Wow, you know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of modernization and development and so on. But later on, you begin to question all this aspect of it, the commercialization, the tourism that they're bringing in and stuff like that. It makes people question. So that is why when I look at all these changes, it does makes me feel, it starts with a little bit of feeling very uncomfortable with the changes that is being brought forward here. And with that, you ask the right questions and meeting of people and meeting with people who are impacted by these changes really opens up my eye, which is why upon researching about the development in Penang, I come across a book by a poet by the name of Mr. Cecil Rajendra. And he wrote a poem called The Scent of Penang. And what happens is that when I read the poems, it tells me about the history of Penang and how it has changed. And when I look at it again in 2008 and then look at it again today, it feels like history is repeating itself. And we're going through the whole cycle of exploitation in the name of economy and so on. And I come to the conclusion that are we developing for the sake of developing, or at least based on greed and stuff like that? So it really troubles me a lot, which is why the two films was produced. It's from my perspective of how I see things happening in Penang, and of course provoking people to think and also to ask them, to make them think about what they can do about it actually. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to find out more about the films. But Jolene, how is it like for you? Are you also witnessing so much change since you were a kid?
Yeah, totally agree with what Andrew just mentioned just now. As a Penang night growing up in different parts of Penang, right, like Andrew on the island and me in the mainland, we see a lot of changes as well. And like Andrew mentioned, by speaking with people that really impacted by all kinds of unnecessary development and over-urbanization, especially in Penang, the second smallest state in Malaysia. And we need to ask the questions to ourselves, like, is this necessary? Like what Andrew emphasized just now, is it just for the sake of developer doing their job to develop the existing land, or is it for the welfare of human beings? And it's also really saddening to see that the current generation, regardless of ages, right, like the older generation or the people around our age or the younger generations, are still really fascinated by Penang being a futuristic state. Like, we're always trying to compete with Kuala Lumpur and, you know, our neighbouring country. But we need to really emphasise the question is, what is enough? And what is the long-term solution that we need? Yeah, which is on coexisting and acknowledging the fact that we have lost so much natural resources. And if you go to Google Earth and you look at the transition of the forest changes, and we can't deny the fact and the truth that our forest is changing and human population is growing and what is enough. Yeah, so like Andrew mentioned about human perspective, and for us, Langer Project Penang, we have been working with citizen scientists on recording wildlife roadkills as well as negative human wildlife interaction. We can say that, yeah, throughout these years, the numbers of negative human-wildlife interaction has definitely increases. And what is the root cause behind all this? It's due to the, you know, maybe could be ignorance from human beings, maybe due to our education system. People just don't see both sides of the story, keep seeing economy benefit in terms of money and greed and development as the ultimate incentive to human civilization. But it's more than that, which I'm sure that people will have a lot of thoughts in this kind of conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. And if correct me if I'm wrong, but the island has also been, you know, increasingly facing floods. There have been landslides. You know, these are the problems that environmentalists have been linking to, you know, all the paving of land, the building on steep slopes, all these, you know, mega projects that are happening. You know, has that also been happening over in Penang?
Yes. I mean, it's a yearly event, if you want to put it that way. Floods is inevitable. Landslides, well, once there's a heavy rain, you would expect tree felling or even landslides happening all around the island. And in fact, not only that, right? There's another issue in Penang where recently Ting City has just published a presentation saying that the temperature in our city has increased tremendously, which is not being addressed at all, you know. And I mean, that's the first thing. Not many people are worried about it, you know. And which is why I think the roles of the NGOs and the roles of the authority needs to highlight this issue, very important, which people need to take action upon this. So that is one thing which I felt that the authority failed to address, actually.
Mm-hmm. Jolene, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, people just being very, you know, we forget about things easily, like now, right? If you ask people in Penang, I live in Bukit Petajam, right? Like our neighboring Taman is Taman Sri Rambai. When it's rained more than 3 to 4 hours, neighborhood over there will be so worried about flooding condition already. Yeah, but like what Andrew mentioned, that people tend to forget things easily. And then once you have the flooding news coming out, and then after a couple of days, people just, you know, swear by the algorithm of the social media, and then they tend to forget about what's happening. People don't address the root cause of the problem. Why is it flooding? Like for me, I own a small farm by the forest in Jawi, Sungai Bakap, Penang. Even though it's by the forest, but flooding still happened. Why? Because land clearing is still happening in the hills as well. And land clearing is not only for urbanization and development, for building infrastructure and roads, but also for those, you know, the incorrect way of doing farming activities. So there are many, many aspects to be addressed on, but authority needs to work alongside with NGOs or proper experts in highlighting the importance of proper landscape use in order for protect human welfare as well, because floods and all this impact are definitely impacting us, right? Yeah, but people just keep on forgetting that this is an important issue which is linked to the nature.
Yeah, I think people forget that, you know, forest trees, they all act as sponges, right? Especially when it rains, you know, that's what's capturing the rain. The more you cut the trees, the more it's going to come down to flood, you know, and to affect you know, everybody in their homes.
Which is why last year, our dams recorded lowest water catchment ever in the history of Penang. And no one is addressing it. No one talks about, hey, this is a sign of climate change or something like that. Or no one is addressing the fact that are the hills being cut so much that the waters in our dam are so low? No one talks about that. And we have going about business as usual, development as usual. In fact, they want to increase the population of people in island. But we can't even address floods issue. We can't even address the water crisis in Penang. And now, what they're going to do, the Penang state government proposing that we should increase the water tariff. And that is a solution. I think it's more than that. We need to take care of the nature first. Yeah. See, that is the thing. At the end of the day, you don't take care of nature, who suffers? The people who live around it will suffer.
Yep, definitely. I'm speaking today to Andrew Han. He's a filmmaker. He's the one who directed the two short films called The Hills and the Sea from 2017 and Doa Seorang Nelayan from 2019. And I'm also speaking to Jolene Yap. She's a wildlife researcher. She's also with the Langer Project in Penang. And we're finding out about what's happening over in Penang. And also, after this quick break, we're going to come back and find out more about the two films that Andrew made, which tackle overdevelopment and the effects it has on people and the environment over in Penang. So stay tuned. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
In a village between the hills and the sea, he grew up between the hills and the sea. His earliest music, the susurration of the waves, the antiphony of miners in the coconut trees. His childhood obsessions, hiking and fishing and swimming, sprinting across the cinnamon sand, digging for cockles, exploring the bush with catapult in hand. All this and more fed on the myriad mysteries of hill and sea. Yet in later years, much as they shaped the man, he could not speak the untamed majesty of that sea or the humped silence of those hills. Caught now between the mountain of despair and the lagoon of tears of his discarded village people, how could he speak of the hills or the sea?
Tengok di sini. Adakah orang minta sedekah? Tak ada. Nelayan tak ada minta sedekah. Yang minta sedekah siapa? Orang yang pemalas kerja. Itu yang saya kata. Nelayan bukan pemalas. Mereka yang paling rajin. Dan selalunya kita mencukupi perbelanjaan kita. Tak pernah yang kita kata tak cukup. Boleh kita hidup. Tak kaya tapi boleh hidup. Tambakkan pula ni. Saya membantah tambakkan pula ni. Kerana anak cucu kita. Bukan untuk saya. Bukan untuk saya. Saya dah umur 60 lebih. Saya mungkin tak pergi, nak pergi ke laut tak berapa lama. Tapi anak cucu kita, di mana satu peluang pekerjaan akan dapat dijalankan walaupun mereka tak begitu kaya, tapi mereka boleh sara hidup dengan keluarga mereka.
Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today are Andrew Han. He's a filmmaker. His films are called The Hills and the Sea and also Doa Seorang Nelayan, which was part of the Freedom Film Fest back in 2017 and 2019. Also joining us is Jolene Yap. She's a wildlife researcher with the Langer Project in Penang. She was also featured in the film The Hills and the Sea. And we're finding out, you know, about what's happening over in Penang, the development projects that are going on there, and how those projects are coming to impact the environment and the people living in Penang and the communities, especially the most marginalized communities, how these mega projects are actually coming to impact them. Let's talk about the films. Andrew, let's talk about the two films that you made, right? So you made The Hills and the Sea, as I mentioned, back in 2017. That also features Jolene. Tell me about that. You know, why did you want to make The Hills and the Sea back then? What were you trying to tell, you know, in that film?
So back then, I think it was around 2016, the issue of reclamation and also the issue of hill development is a very hot topic in Penang. So when I was looking for an angle, there were many issues actually on in regards to hill. There are cutting of hills for highways, there are cutting hills for development, and also they're cutting hills for farming, things like that, right? So while looking for the angle of stories, researching, and one of my friends said that, hey, you should check out this lady, Jolene, who is, they put it very, very weirdly, say that this girl who spent whole day looking at monkeys, you should check her out. So, okay.
Poor Jolene. Okay. She does much more than that.
Yes, exactly. I was like, oh, right, let's go find out. So I contacted her, and the first thing she said is that, come, follow me, go into the jungle, and let's see what I do. So immediately, I followed her, looking at her research and her project and so on, and totally saw that there is actually a connection of her research subject, which is the dusky leaf monkey, the langurs, with hill development and how hill development actually, or should I say urbanization in Penang, actually impact the reduce of the population of dusky leaf monkeys. And I said that is a story which I can cover itself. And the other part of the documentary is also reclamation and trying to connect that the hills and the seas are also connected in some way or another. And also how development itself is impacting the hills and also the sea which Penang Island is surrounded by it. So meeting with people again, meeting with the community of fishers in Tanjung Tokong also helps me to say that there is a story of connection. And coming across the community of fishermen in Tanjung Tokong, and there was already a reclamation project ongoing in Tanjung Tokong. And I saw that it's an opportunity for me to document the life impact, the real impact of reclamation to the people over there. Because I know later on in future, there will be another mega reclamation happening in the south of Penang. So might as well just document the hardship that the fishermen are going through with the reclamation in the north of Penang. So combining these two stories in hope that it will document it as a historical documentation that these things has happened, and in hope in future people may learn out from this. And that is how I see my film may progress. You know what I mean?
Let's talk about the fisherman's part a bit later as well, because I think that's also tied into your second film, Doa Seorang Nelayan, right? But Julian, talk to me about, you know, what you spoke about during the film. I mean, for the benefit of those who haven't seen it yet, you know, what were some of the issues that you were tackling through the film?
All right, yeah. I really like the way Andrew curated the whole film process, because it was very spontaneous. We don't really have a script. So during the first day, Andrew followed me into the forest, right? And then we were just following the dusky langurs, etc. And then and Andrew was very lucky during that whole month, June of 2016, because at that time, the dusky langurs troop that we were following in the forest of Telobahang, they took us to several of their habitat types. Yeah, because the dusky langurs around Telobahang, they are not only staying in the forest, but they also living around by the road. Yeah, as well as foraging by the coastal area, by the sea. Yeah, hence it went very well with the title of the documentary, The Hills and the Sea. So the issue that we raise in the dusky langur part of the documentary is on the impact of habitat fragmentation, which is also due to deforestation and as well as the forest cover loss. So there are lots of wildlife residents around us, including the dusky langurs, the squirrel, the long-tailed macaques, which we call them the wildlife residents, because they are residents just like us, just like they are wildlife residents, not humans. Yeah, so when the habitat loss happens, right, and then you have habitat fragmentation, and then all these wildlife residents, they are living close to the edges of the forest loss. And then so this kind of like increases the interaction between humans and wildlife. Yeah, so one of the important parts that Andrew highlighted in the film is also on the roadkill issue. So if people check out the film, you would see that the whole process of dealing with roadkill, especially roadkill on the charismatic species dusky langurs, and why the roadkill happens is due to habitat loss and fragmentation, and how this actually impact the population, etc. So the ultimate objective, the message of the dusky langurs from this documentary is trying to highlight the issue of habitat loss and fragmentation towards threatening our local wildlife.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's not just dusky langurs, right? I mean, as you said, they're iconic species, but you know, everything in that surrounding area is going to be impacted as well.
Wow. Definitely. Mm.
Okay. And I mean, the film was made, as we said, so it was recorded in 2016, as you told us, released in 2017. You know, what has happened since then? You know, has anything gotten better? Has it gotten worse? You know, what, as far as you're concerned, Jolene, you know, what has happened since?
So the documentary actually paved out a very good way for us to push for one of the mitigation solutions for habitat fragmentation. So when I went to KL, the film festival, and we saw the response from the audience, they are so enthusiastic and they express interest in helping wild animals to cross the road safely, even do their parts as citizen scientists. And since then, our team has been working very hard to push for a canopy bridge installation in Penang. So fortunately, back in 2019, we successfully installed the first urban canopy bridge in Malaysia. Yeah, I'm sure we spoke about this during the last interview, Juliet. Yeah, so sure. The bridge kind of like paved out a way for research opportunities in Malaysia as well, in Southeast Asia as well. And since then, we have data of dusky langurs, long-tailed macaque, abandoned squirrels, and different wildlife that utilizing the canopy bridge. And this shows that the canopy bridge can be a good mitigation conservation action that people like us, like citizen scientists and non-policy makers or non-politician or non-authority members, can actually push this for our neighborhoods, for our roads, and for any fragments that we need a corridor to link between the habitats. Yeah, so I would see the outcome of the documentary is positive, but there's still a lot of things to be done, especially right now. There's so many things going on and due to the pandemic, and it's really hard to push for more research and more conservation action. So really hope that the rescreening of this documentary would, you know, trying to attract more people with like-minded thoughts that we would join forces together so that the multi-stakeholders can do their parts together.
Because the issues are still existing, right? And Andrew, you know, of course, the other part of the film was focused a lot on fishermen and, you know, how their lives are going to be impacted by all of these reclamation projects, right? Let's talk about the first film first. Let's talk about The Hills and the Sea first. Talk to me about the fishermen that you spoke to. You know, what is it that they told you? What is it that you discovered, you know, through speaking to them?
So, when I tried to get into the community, the fishing community in Tanjung Tokong, was introduced to Mr. Ishak, or I call him Pak Bayin. He's the head of the fishermen there. So I can see in his eyes when I was talking to him that I wanted to do a film about reclamation. There is a sense of hopelessness. He said, "What for? There's no point anymore." The reclamation is ongoing and there's nothing much you can do. That defeated spirit really saddens me to say that, these are the B40 community, they feel very voiceless and helpless, and I decided to commit to go and see him every day, to make networks with them every day, and to tell them what's the intention and purpose of it. So at first they were not very keen of being appear on camera, but sooner or later I did a shorter film about the place over there, and it got a lot of views. And I also created a Facebook page for them, and they started to see the power of social media and the internet and how they can actually progress and push their issues out for people to understand it. Although, of course, it cannot stop the project, I think it raises very good awareness and also a good support from the general public. So Pak Bayin, the head of fishermen, decided to say yes, he would like to participate in this documentary and to become the main character of the documentary together with Jolene. So I took about, I think, 2-3 months just to go and see him and record and look at their daily lives and so on, and try to connect the stories of development impacting, or should I say, the reclamation impacting the lives of the fishermen. So if you look at the film, there were, I won't say fortunate, unfortunate, there were several scenes which I was able to capture and tell people about the impact of reclamation very clearly.
Okay. And you followed this up with Doa Seorang Nelayan in 2019, right? And that one, if I'm correct in saying this, the protagonist is Encik Zakaria, also a fisherman, right? Tell me why you did that follow. I mean, am I right, first of all, in calling it a follow-up film? What was your inspiration to film Doa Seorang Nelayan?
I think similar with The Hills and the Sea, the Doa Seorang Nelayan was produced because out of urgency. The Penang South Reclamation was actually proposed back in 2015 and 2016. And with how the authorities and the developers and the media portray that it's a good development, and how the community are all supportive when I go to the ground and talk to the people, they were not consulted, they were not happy with the process, and their voice was not heard. So I thought that it's important to quickly come up with a film and put up in a Freedom Film Festival so people can know about this issue. Because I strongly believe that none of the major media outlets would like to talk about these things in detail or from perspective of Encik Haji Zakaria. And second thing is also because Tuan Haji Zakaria is such a nice person. He's he's real life, he's always smiling, and again, he was about giving up. There's nothing he can do anymore, right? And I told him that let's try to produce a film, and he said, okay, no problem, let me help you in that. And he was able to introduce me. People, if he even able to take me out to the sea, was a bad idea for me because I have a weak stomach. So, but it was fine, and really shows me how great their lifestyle is and how sustainable their lifestyle is. Right, the proposal by the government to elevate their lifestyle doesn't make sense to them because what they are doing right now is very peaceful, and they are able to live life in a very sustainable way. So I totally understand why they reject a mega reclamation like this, because they see there are more cons than pros. I think their decision and their thoughts needs to be consulted and respected, which is why the whole documentary is to capture Tuan Haji Zakaria, which is a representation of the community of fishers in Sungai Batu or the south of Penang itself.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the film, right? And, you know, what he said stood out for me. You know, we're not rich, but we can survive. You know, we're not looking for handouts. We can look after ourselves. We don't need much. We're not asking for anything. Just leave us alone, right? Let us continue to do what we're doing. We know how to do it best. Like you said, you know, they know how best to protect that ecosystem because obviously they rely on that ecosystem. So they're not going to overfish. They're not going to destroy it. They're going to protect it and make sure it, you know, lasts for generations, right? That's also something he said.
That's right. And I did show him the film From the Hills and the Sea. And he said, yeah, it makes sense. You look at the fishermen in Tanjung Tokong or in that area, Tanjung Tokong, Bagan, Jemaah, Gurney Drive and Paramount. You will see that the lifestyle and the social structure of the community there has changed tremendously. Last time, the fishermen there can become a full-time fisherman. Today, the fishermen had to do two jobs. Like, for example, Pak Bayin, the fisherman that I interviewed, which I did not tell because it was a very shameful thing to show. He works as a fisherman, and at night, he becomes a security guard. And sometimes he tried to do by selling socks in Pasar Malam and so on, which are things which a long time ago, they did not. They fish and then they rest the entire day. Right now, they have to hustle. And to some people say, oh, this is good. They should need to work harder. But that is not a lifestyle that they want. They would like to spend more time with family, spend more time in their malls, with friends and so on. And when Tuan Haji Zakaria see this is happening in Tanjung Tokong, he told me that this is not a life that my people would like to look forward to, working whole day. It's just silly. So that's the reason why.
And, you know, as we mentioned, the films were made 2017, 2019, respectively. Would you say they're even more relevant now than they were before?
Of course. I think with the progress and the development that has been pushed forward in Penang, people need to reflect upon all these development projects that we are having today. All these things are being presented in good presentation and so on, but no one actually stopped and think about the effects and negative impact and effects on society and environment, which a lot of times is being, you know, swept under the carpet. And a lot of people always say there is a way, to develop, we have to exploit, we have the environment will need to be, you know, destroyed a little bit. All we have to do is think of a strong mitigation and a balance to it, which I totally disagree. We are living in a time when there is an environmental crisis. I think we shouldn't even consider the fact that we destroy and then we mitigate later. Who would do that, right? So that's something needs to be questioned when they use words like this. It will be a balanced development and we will mitigate the problem. We can't even mitigate the flood problem in our Penang state. What more about mega reclamation or mega projects like this will amplify the environmental crisis in Penang? So it shouldn't be considered that way. And we need to really rethink and reflect upon how development should be, how progress should be in order to, you know, coexist with our natural environment right now.
Julian, I'm sure you agree with that, and also that, you know, the whole idea of we can't have infinite growth on a finite planet, right? I mean, what are your thoughts on this as well?
Yes, yeah, totally agree on what Andrew and you just raised up on the issue on people are not understanding the roots of our problem. Yeah, since Andrew has spoken a lot of from a human dimension aspect. Yeah, so like we never really learn, right? Like COVID-19 is already a very good example. We already know that zoonosis is happening, yeah, and people are still not learning to respect nature. And the first thing to do that is to safeguard our existing natural resources. Yeah. And during the COVID pandemic time, and then we did receive a lot of reports of negative human-wildlife interaction. And this is quite concerning, because when there's more human-wildlife interaction in a bad way, like, for example, people are intruding the natural habitat, cutting down the forests, and animals has nowhere to go, and they've been split into small fragments, and they would need to come to your neighborhood and move on your rooftop and move along your cable wire, which is also highlighted in the documentary The Hills and the Sea. And all this issue is really concerning, because people don't understand the importance of having a connectivity between natural habitats. So this increases human feeding wildlife habits, as well as illegal wildlife poaching activities. And this also increases the opportunities for disease transmission. Yeah, so all these are impact of humans, you know, destroying the natural resources around us. But since there are so many, you know, problems regarding zoonosis occurring on the news, or even human-wildlife conflict occurring on the news, but people just don't care, yeah, which is also take into consideration of flooding issue as well as environmental crisis. But all these are interconnected. It's how we, you know, keep the ecosystem change moving and to avoid all these problems from happening. But the government's always thinking of a mitigation solution, etc. Like, from my personal experience, since the documentary by Andrew came out, and then they were quite several consultation company, yeah, on environmental impact assessment. They approached Langgar Project Penang, and they were very interested in canopy bridges. And they would ask us about, like, oh, okay, let's include this as part of the development, you know, the assessment plan, blah, 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 all that. But it's really important for us to emphasize that like the conservation actions tools that we came out with, like canopy bridges or even environmental education or even monkey-proof bin to avoid people, to avoid the macaques from taking out the trash from the bin. All these are the efforts that done by researchers and citizen scientists so that the situation won't get worse. But this shouldn't be taken advantage by people who feel like this are able to solve the problem of deforestation or even development. Yeah. Is our take whether we'll do it or not in order to promote for coexistence. Because if we still don't tackle the roots, like, for example, yeah, deforestation causes habitat fragmentation, and then you have increasing interaction of human-wildlife conflicts, and which cause more zoonosis and more attacks between humans and wildlife, etc., then the problem won't be solved. It all goes to the roots of all problem. And to me, I feel like people need to get involved. Like, the film plays its part as an awareness tool for people to be aware of, but there's still many people out there who don't understand. They don't understand the purpose of the film. They don't understand the purpose of what Andrew is doing and what we are doing. They see things differently. So it's a very complicated issue to address, but I feel like we need to do our part to gather all different stakeholders in realizing their power and their point of view in making the right decision and voice out for the right perspective. Yeah.
And I guess, you know, Andrew, you know, what are your hopes? So the films are now, you know, released on YouTube, on the Freedom Film Fest YouTube channel. What are your hopes for anybody who's going to watch it? You know, what do you hope that they will take away from your films?
I really hope that people who watch my film will be able to realize that we are living in a time where the environment are in a serious crisis. And I really hope also that by watching or even being exposed with issues of environment and climate change, they will be more equipped with knowledge of environment, knowing how the environment works and so on, so that they are able to participate in the way development happens in Penang. I think right now in Penang, people do give up the rights of development and progress to the higher power, to the government, to the developers, and to the rich, which I think is wrong. And secondly, also, I do not trust the one in power to decide everything because of the mentality of exploitation and profit gaining and so on. Therefore, I think the people need to participate it by also equipping themselves with the right knowledge. And to watch films like myself, it's a lesson to be learned because it's history, it's happening, it had happened or it's happening right now. And these are all real voices, real documentation, which they can reflect upon it and then think about the future or think about how this development will affect their future. Okay, so this is something which I really hope that people may participate actively. You know, we have gone through political changes and you know, movement has helped us to understand our power since 2018. I think people are able to even participate more intensively when it comes to environmental issues or climate change because they are able to make a difference in influencing and lobbying for a better future in Penang or even in Malaysia too.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. Again, the films are available on Freedom Film Network's YouTube channel. Just search for the Freedom Film Fest on YouTube. Stay informed, stay updated, watch those two films. I think it's a good gateway, you know, to find out more about the issues that are happening. And like Andrew said, you know, it's coming directly from the people themselves. So just head there, catch the films there. And if you'd like to find out more about the Langer Project Penang, just head to Langer Project Penang. There's more information there. And just to note also that this weekend, new films will be released on the Freedom Film Network YouTube channel. There's She's My Son, directed by Indrani Kopal, and Pecah Lobang, which is directed by Posi Teng. So that's going to be released this Friday. Do watch that. All the films are very short. You know, I think both of Andrew's films are about less than 20 minutes each, right, Andrew? Very short, very easy to digest. So just head there and find out more. Stay informed, stay updated. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcast on the BFM app or at bfm.my/learn. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Saya pernah sekali saya pergi seorang-seorang, jadi saya letak sauh, kemudian saya renung ke langit. Apabila kita renung ke langit, kita sudah tak nampak apa di kawasan kita, di keliling kita. Kita nampak air laut tenang dan suasananya hanya kita seorang diri saja. Di masa itu saya menangis teresak-esak sebab mengenangkan saya sekarang seorang diri saja di tempat yang luas. Saya tak tahu nak ke mana. Tak ada tempat nak minta tolong. Kita hanya minta tolong kepada Allah saja di situ. Itulah yang rasa saya menangis keluar air mata tapi siapa pun tak nampak. Itu yang saya rasa betul-betul masuk dalam hati saya sampai sekarang.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.